Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I am your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 12, Virtualization, Infrastructure as a Service, and Converged Infrastructure with Elias Knaser. Elias, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Hey, I am great. I'm a little bit cold. It got cold again here in Ohio. Maybe I'll turn up the heat one of these days. I was out riding my bike, and you know, life was great, but then it got cold again. So, you know, so,
yeah, I can sympathize. We're in Chicago, so
yeah, you know, we're never gonna shake the weather, it seems. But you get a glimpse of spring, and then it goes away. So, well, Elias, first of all, thanks for being on the show. If everybody doesn't know Elias, he is the author of VCP for ExamCram, the VMware Certified Professional book. It's available on Amazon, and he's also been author of a number of other books. Now, Elias, is that the newest book that you have out right now?
That's correct. That's the VCP4 ExamCram. That is the newest book.
Cool, cool. Now, I tell you, I am definitely not the book type of guy. I can bang blog outs or bang out blogs or white papers, no problem. But you know, sit down and hundreds of pages, I couldn't imagine doing it. That's a lot of work. And Elias has his personal blog at www.eliaskinaser.com, and he's on Twitter at Elias Knaser, and that's ElIasKHNaser. Now, Elias and I kind of bumped into each other last year at a storage event, and you know, we've bumped into each other since then at VMworld, and him and I actually have a kind of an interesting handoff situation. When I started at Veeam, I had to stop my everyday virtualization blog as it was, meaning I couldn't, you know, do twice weekly and the monthly how-to that I was doing previously. And then the magazine said, you know, well, who do you recommend? And I threw out Elias. So he actually started the Virtual Insider blog at Virtualization Review, and he also still writes for Information Week and Forbes on a number of virtualization topics. I don't know how you do it all, guy.
Yeah, it gets frustrating at some point. It's a lot of writing.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, he has a day job. He's a virtualization practice manager at Artemis Technologies in Chicago. Now, what do you do at Artemis? What does that mean, virtualization practice manager?
So I'm responsible for everything virtualization. So our primary focus is VMware. We also have a practice around desktop virtualization with Citrix, and we do some Microsoft SCCM and Hyper-V. But the primary focus is around VMware, and we do the full suite from vSphere, vCenter, SRM, Lab Manager, the whole thing basically.
Cool. So you probably jump on to customers at all levels of their journey, right? Never heard of it to, you know, sharpshoot to the next level. Is that right?
Absolutely. Actually, sometimes it could be once in a day. You'll be from never heard of it to, yeah, let's talk about the cloud.
Yeah, or better yet, you go into somebody that knows it better than you. You know, that's always...
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, sometimes there's some people out there. Every time I write a blog or present in public, I just mentally prepare myself that, yeah, there might be 10% of the people out there that know what I'm talking about better than me. So,
right.
You know,
right.
There's a lot of smart people out there. So it's cool to kind of get involved with different levels and different people, and I can appreciate that challenge from some professional experience I have before. So we were talking a little bit before, Elias, and one of the cool things you have going on is infrastructure as a service. So, you know, everybody sees these acronyms floating around out there, IaaS. It's a tough one to say, but you know, what are you really delivering as infrastructure as a service offering, and what does that mean to like the typical virtualization customer, especially those that might be on the verge of thinking something like that might make sense for them?
Yeah, so infrastructure as a service is a really interesting play, and companies of different sizes use it differently. We're seeing that a lot of small to medium-sized companies, the CTOs or CIOs that we're talking to, they want to get out of the business of managing their data center. They want to be able to say, look, I'm here today. Help me get to the cloud. I want to be completely virtualized. I want to be completely in the cloud. I want to be able to, if I need a VM, the resources there, I don't want to have to worry about provisioning network or servers or memory or storage, nothing. Just give me a console, tell me where to point it to, and tell me how to provision my own stuff, and I will pay as I go. So we're seeing a lot of that with small to medium-sized companies that just want to get out of that data center management and provisioning and vendors and all that. But then we're also seeing it in the enterprise. Now, the enterprise is a little reluctant, so they're sort of testing it with an extension to their data center. So we'll put a few VMs in the cloud and see how it works. We'll test it out. We'll put certain services. Maybe we'll use it as a backup or a disaster recovery. But the model is definitely there. I still think we have a ways to go, but I definitely think that, you know, in the coming years, I would very, very highly doubt that anybody would be building data centers, you know, maybe in 10 years or 12 years, because it's more convenient. Why not pay it as a utility-based computing?
Well, yeah, I definitely, you know, as a person, as a blogger myself, I, you know, you hear all these messages, and so I push myself to kind of go deeper with these, I don't want to say buzzword technologies, but really push myself. And actually, I like a lot of different things. I like cloud storage. I like, you know, applications in the cloud. I like those types of things. But I still like a little bit of compute locally. And honestly, even for my own lab functions at home, I go back and forth on the compute in the cloud, okay? Because that's really your big jump, okay? Really, there's a lot of use cases for, like, delivery networks and cloud storage, especially for data protection. But when you talk about run the whole workload there, you know, something that used to be locally, then I start getting a little bit wiggly on the cost model, you know, dollars per hour.
No, absolutely right. And there's still a ways to go.
Yeah.
And we have a ways to go. I mean, communication links have to catch up to be able to deliver what we're expecting from a service. So you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, from a comfort level, I think it's a psychological thing that we can't get over just yet. But that's why I said, I think in the next, you know, down the line, 10, 12 years, we can potentially get to that. But, yeah, we still have a ways to walk.
Well, that connectivity issue is a big one. And it's not so much VPN and security. It's speed, performance, and the cost associated with it. You know, we're used to gigabit links from server to server in the data center, right? We're not used to having gigabit links from data center to the cloud. Okay,
correct.
But we might need that type of rich experience in that medium and upper size. I don't know how much that much internet connectivity costs, but I can imagine it's not cheap.
It's not cheap at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one issue. In fact, I think that the connectivity is really going to be the next enabler, you know. I think that once the connectivity becomes ubiquitous, and just like everything else, right, prices go down.
Yep.
Yeah, if prices go down, features go up. So once the connectivity gets addressed, then your other categories of infrastructure as a service would roll in almost naturally, become that natural choice. So what are you seeing? Are you seeing, like, what makes up infrastructure as a service? Is it like storage and compute and applications all in one, or is it, you know, what's the typical makeup?
That's a great question. And again, it's depending on the company. For the companies that are going complete infrastructure as a service, yes, it makes up storage, compute, network, everything lives in the cloud.
Wow.
For enterprise companies, we're seeing a lot of, they're leveraging a lot of the infrastructure as a service from a storage perspective. I want to be able to expand, but I don't want to have to go out and buy, you know, X amount of terabytes. Some companies, they're leveraging their you know, vSphere deployments where they need a little more horsepower towards the end of the month, and they're being able to tap into these public clouds, so to speak, to leverage whatever they need to do at the end of the month. So we're seeing a lot of compute, and we're seeing a lot of storage clouds for sure.
You know, in my experience, I had a situation where this was definitely ahead of the cloud, but it would have been a good use case for the cloud, and it was a web service that all it did was take in some inputs and spit out some outputs, and it was remanifested public information. And at the time, it was my biggest pain in the butt because it was a virtual machine, and it would just chew and chew and chew CPU, and we had 10 of them behind a load balancer. I don't even remember how many. It was a bunch. And they were spread across data centers and all that. So it's like, if all they do is run this little web service, why not throw them in the cloud and send the APIs out and back? Because it wasn't – that data zone was – really, it didn't matter. you know, if it Absolutely. Was intercepted. And then further, I don't think we would have cared if the source code, or at least the executables, would have been picked up in the cloud either. So I had a use case, you know, too long ago. It was ahead of its time, I guess. But, you know, especially in the enterprise, you're going to see those things pop up. And then how we make them fit, that'll be, you know, there's going to be challenges along the way. And the networking is probably the best part. And I think people are taking steps that way now with technologies like converged infrastructure. Are you working with that at all?
Oh, yeah. Converged infrastructure is definitely a very, very hot topic that we come across in almost every engagement that we're at right now. It's definitely an interesting topic. I mean, converged infrastructure can take a couple of different forms, right? It could be a converged infrastructure that includes the whole stack from network to storage to servers, you know, the whole thing. Or it could be converged network, which is something along the lines of, you know, what Cisco has, or maybe Siegel with the InfiniBand stuff. But the converged infrastructure stack is mostly what I'm focused on, and what I think is going to be the enabler to the private cloud. So the way we build data centers today is becoming a little outdated. You know, you have four or five vendors that you deal with. You order your servers from a vendor, and your network from a vendor, and your storage from a vendor, and you got to wait for them to come in and install storage. And, you know, you might have a firmware upgraded or not. Actually, we ran across this particular problem in a data center that we're building right now. So they've ordered all of these different components. Putting them together, we found that we had to flash the QLogic cards that are in the servers, and then the switches needed another firmware upgrade. So the project should have taken a month. It took two because of some of these hurdles. Well, what if you rolled in a rack that had server, storage, network, everything, pre-tested, pre-configured, and all you have to do is connect it to your network? It's clean, it's elegant, it's perfect. So from that perspective, I think converged infrastructure is spot on where data centers are going.
Does that, you know, you said there's different levels of embracement, be it storage, networking, and then all three, storage, compute, and networking. Is there a, you know, kind of in that medium, small, medium business, not quite the large enterprise, but do you see more going all in the medium side, or do you see just storage and networking going converged?
Right now, I am seeing a lot of networking obviously go converged. I expect to see a lot of the whole stack going converged, especially in the medium to large enterprise.
Yeah.
I definitely see that moving forward.
I think that it's a great, you know, unit of work to if you have a rack, and I historically have not been a blade guy, okay, but I'm starting to see the light now, okay. Of course, the orchestration and the integrated management superior, but I'm also a cheap guy, okay. I'm very frugal, so dollar for dollar for compute on capital purchase, you know, you can still get more with the single rack servers, okay? But then if you fill up the blades, then you really, you know, especially if you're starting fully populated, you can break even and be ahead in those situations. So, I mean, once I kind of break through the cost models, you can find a use case, and I think that a blade is kind of the first step in, and then your storage and networking kind of connects, you know, is a next converged step. My thing, though, is do you see a lot of FCOE?
We are not seeing a lot of FCOE yet.
Okay, good.
From what I'm understanding, it's there's a standard, I guess, that hasn't been committed to yet. So Cisco has their standard, and then everybody else has their standard. And they, you know, they're waiting for the standards committee to say, well, this is what the standard is going to be moving forward. Now, I don't know if that's been rectified or not.
Sure.
But to go back to your point, you bring up a very important point with regards to the blades. See, the converged infrastructure, in my opinion, should be very purpose-oriented use cases. So you're not just using it as a replacement of everything.
Right.
You're bringing it for a purpose. So if you're bringing in Exchange for 10,000 users, you can bring in these purpose-built, so to speak, converged infrastructures that can handle your load. So instead of just isolating or siloing down at the server level, you're siloing sort of at the pod level. from a conversion infrastructure. And the orchestration layer is where, you know, you have all the savings from an operational perspective. So you might spend more money, but instead of taking a data center 2 months to be set up, it'll take 2 weeks, and that saves you money right there.
And where I was stuck on the storage is because it's all fitting into my head just fine, but then I get stuck on FCOE, and that your standards issue is a good report of what's going on. But the other thing is, I guess if I had to choose a converged storage protocol, I'd definitely go with 10 gig iSCSI, I think, right now, today. First of all, just on Twitter, just last night, I see all my friends saying how cool it is. And then I look over here at my not so nice lab. And then, so I'd like to, you know, I think that would be probably the best way in that medium size enterprise, there's, you know, small to medium, to really take advantage of that pretty easily. Because, especially with FCOE, you have to invest in a whole separate storage network or Ethernet network for the storage. Because it's not like Ethernet on FCOE is the same Ethernet that you would run your 10 gigabit Ethernet. And that's, I think, the difference between the standards right now. I'm not exactly sure. But, you know, that's one of those things that FCOE, and a lot of people critique it, they think it's like a intermediate technology or a Band-Aid on top of a not-so-good tech storage protocol or something. But, you know, there's a lot of Fibre Channel out there. That's why I bring it up, because Fibre Channel historically has been the way to go for your traditional enterprise SAN. And then even some of your modular use cases, you know, you'd step down to some low-end small switching or direct Fibre Channel attached storage environments. But, you know, to the converged infrastructure, I just see Fibre Channel as that thing that doesn't fit, you know?
No, I agree with you, and that's it's a very religious war, right? Yeah. So I'm a Fibre Channel guy when it comes to storage, but I'm not really a storage guy out there, you know, per se. But it depending on who you ask, they can have very drastic views one way or another. A lot of people will think FCOE will actually kill 10 gig Ethernet. A lot of people will think 10 gig Ethernet will kind of not allow FCOE to even take off. I think they both will be around. I think 10 gig Ethernet will be the more popular approach. But time will tell, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, definitely in terms of probably number of installs, it'll probably be the more popular approach. As far as number of terabytes, who knows, right? It depends on how you want to calculate those types of numbers also. But, yeah, I think that, you know, and today this is kind of the same argument a couple years ago of, you know, SAN or NFS for VMware storage. You know, and a lot of times that was reflective of what your storage environment was at the time. And so now you've introduced this virtualization thing. Well, which way do I go? Do I go VMFS or do I go with NFS data stores? And I would answer the question, where do you see your environment going? Are you aligning yourself to a storage provider or to a virtualized environment? And if you're, in the case of VMware, aligning yourself to a virtualized environment, I would always kind of say, well, think about that. You want to take advantage of all the vSphere features. Well, then go with one of the SAN protocols, be it Fibre Channel or iSCSI, simply because you could leverage VMFS at that point. And, you know, VMFS is always held first in line for the features with VMware. Okay, so that kind of answers the question, you know, where's your platform? If your platform's, you know, virtualization first, and if you're really on board, that kind of answers your storage question 3 years ago. Today, I think that you kind of have the same question, but you got to look longer term. You know, do you want to really go converged? I think if you had to make a decision today, I think you're pretty much, you have an easier route ahead of you with 10 gig iSCSI in the converged infrastructure space. This is my suspicion. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I agree with you 100%. I agree with you on both, actually. My preference, while NFS has definitely, you know, come to the table, and it's a great way of doing everything, but I'm still a big fan of VMFS, and I completely agree with you on, you know, from a converged infrastructure and 10 gig Ethernet, we're on the same page.
Well, the thing is like, you know, NFS is, it's a good network file system as it is, but any product that you have that decision, luckily, can usually do block storage as well. So, you know, I think that you just got to kind of identify where the platform is and where the direction is going, and then I think those questions really get answered pretty easily, I think. That's just my take.
No. I agree 100%.
So, hey, man, every podcast has a gimmick, and I've got a gimmick for you, Elias. I have a segment of the podcast called Three Views from You. And what this is, I'm going to ask you three different questions, point in time related, one in your past, one in your present, and one in the future. And this is you as a technologist. This isn't necessarily as virtualization guy, isn't necessarily as what you do professionally or, you know, whatever, just you as a technologist. So here we go. So, Elias, in your history or thus far in your career, what's the most interesting story or experience that you can share with us?
So I'll give you one that was recent and one that was very far back. So as with anybody that started with virtualization, the thing that that I loved the most about it, or the best thing I've ever implemented, was when I installed vMotion in a large enterprise. But that was very, very long time ago. A recent project that it's kind of silly, but for whatever reason I enjoy it, is being able to load a Mac on a PC, a virtual machine. I don't know why, but that particular project was very, very entertaining from a personal perspective, at least.
Oh, sure, definitely. It can definitely. That's really like the novelty of a virtual machine all over again, and it probably, you know, feels a little bit better because it's like one of those super narrow use cases, and I guess you're not really supposed to, right? Because it's not licensed.
Yeah, exactly.
Cross. But, you know, what? Well, let's just say you did that as a virtual machine on a Windows virtual machine within a Mac OS, right? So then it's licensed, right?
Right?
No, that's
right.
Crazy. How about going on today? What's most interesting to you, or where do you find your passion technology-wise to, you know, go on as a technologist today?
I see myself focusing a lot on mobile computing and desktop computing. Type 1 client hypervisors are definitely a passion right now, and I'm extremely attracted to mobile devices like the Motorola Atrix, which in my opinion are going to be the computer of the future. The ability to just take your cell phone and turn it into the ideal thing client, connect to a VDI image in the data center, and you have connectivity no matter where you are. I mean, we've solved the issue of, hey, what if I'm offline? Well, you can't be offline unless you don't have a 4G signal or you're on a plane. And a lot of the U.S. planes today have Wi-Fi on them. Mm-hmm. So the idea of being disconnected is very difficult. We live in a connected world. It is what it is. So mobile computing and desktop computing is definitely where I'm focused a lot right now.
Yeah, because I think that the endpoint is only getting more mature, and it's getting more ergonomically friendly, more transportable, and those examples you identified, and then the connectivity is improving. So, yep. And you know what the weird thing is like a lot of the protocols are already there. You know, like VDI protocols, okay? Those are pretty advanced in the scheme of things because they've had to work around constrained networks. So these protocols are really, they're at the floodgate, you know, to really deploy. So, yeah, rock on. That's pretty cool. So into the future then, what, you know, longer term, what do you find yourself most excited in or, you know, looking forward to down the road?
Definitely cloud, a lot of cloud and a lot of infrastructure as a service, in particular as the G2 of infrastructure as a service, or the G2 of converged infrastructure, is something that I'm definitely very looking forward to. I'm looking forward to when we can get utility-based computing in the form of grid computing to meet virtual computing. So, and what I mean by that is today when you install vSphere, you're installing it on a host. There's always a one-to-one relationship between a VM and a host. I'm hoping we get to a point where it's literally grid computing and then you have your virtual infrastructure on top, so that the VM doesn't care where it's getting its computing power from. It doesn't have a relationship with a host. So any host can fail at any time and it would still not affect that VM. That is what I'm hoping we can get to at some point.
Well, I think it's a natural evolution, right? I mean, there's technologies out there that kind of do that now, a couple of them that I can think of off the top of my head. But, yeah, I think that would be really, especially in that really large environment, or even the you know, the provider class, you know, which again would be really large. I think that would definitely be a welcome technology. And then, you know, just that's another layer of abstraction, right? You know, we're not worried about this host and that host, and probably other building blocks like blade chassis and all those are really the start for what we have today that would really kind of enable that kind of stuff. Well, cool. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast, Elias.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
If anybody, again, wants to follow Elias, he's on Twitter at Elias Knaser, and he also writes the Elias Knaser blog and the Virtual Insider blog and all kinds of books and all kinds of stuff. And if you have any comments on the podcast, you can send an email to podcast@veeam.com. You can follow Veeam on Twitter at Veeam. And then I, myself, am on Twitter at Rick Vanover. Elias, it's been a great show. Thanks for being on.
Thank you.
All right. Cheers.